Chapter 5. 2 + 2 = 4. It was 3 years ago. It was on a dark evening in a narrow street near one of the railway stations. She was standing under a street lamp that did not give much light. She had a young face painted with very thick makeup, so it looked like a mask. Party women never paint their faces. There was nobody else in the street and no telescreen. She said, "It'll be $2. I..." Winston was writing in his diary, but he stopped because it was too difficult to go on. From time to time, he had a terrible desire to swear as loudly as he could, or to hit his head against the wall, or kick the table. He wanted to do any noisy or painful thing to prevent himself from remembering that time with the prole woman. Having sex with a prole was an offence for party members, but sometimes Winston, like many party members, risked it. Then he would start to feel angry again. Now Winston hoped that writing about it might help. He breathed deeply and went on. "I went with her through a doorway in a wall and down some steps into a kitchen. There was a bed against a wall and an oil lamp on a table turned down very low. She..." Thinking about that time made Winston think about his wife. He believed he was still married to Catherine because he had not heard that she was dead and they had never been divorced. They had only been together for about 15 months, 10 or 11 years earlier, and they had parted when they found out that they could not have children. The party believed that sex was for having children, not for love or enjoyment. Boys and girls learned this from an early age, and a lot of them also joined the anti-sex society, which was against having sex at all. Winston remembered how Catherine was a tall, fair-haired young woman with a handsome face. But early in their married life, he had discovered that she was the stupidest person he had ever met. She understood nothing and talked in party slogans. He could have carried on living with her if it had not been for one thing: sex. She wanted children, so she wanted to have sex, but she hated it. Winston had no desire for her and hated holding her stiff body. Then, at last, when no children came, they agreed to part. Winston picked up his pen again and wrote, "The prole woman threw herself down on the bed and at once pulled up her skirt. He saw himself standing in the dark kitchen with the smell of dirt and the prole woman's cheap perfume. "Why does it have to be like this?" he asked himself. "Why is it a thought crime to want to love and be loved? And more than that, to experience desire?" But he had to write the rest of the story. He wrote how he had turned up the oil lamp to see the woman better. Under the thick makeup, her face was old and lined, and she had no teeth. "But I still went ahead and did it." He put down his pen and closed his eyes. He had written it down at last, but it made no difference. He still wanted to swear as loudly as he could, but he said nothing. He picked up his pen again and wrote, "If there is hope, it is with the proles." The proles are 85% of the population of Oceania, so there are enough people to make an army and defeat the party, he thought. Party members can't destroy the party. There aren't enough of them. The proles, if they realised how much strength they have, could get together and overthrow the party. But immediately, Winston had another thought. "They won't. They don't realise what the real problems are. They just fight and swear and argue among themselves." He remembered feeling excited one day when he suddenly heard huge shouts and cries coming from a prowl part of the city. "It's started," he had thought. "The prowls are starting a revolution against the party." For a moment, he had heard the huge power of the prowls. Then he had seen a large crowd of people in a market where someone was selling pans, which were rare things in London. The noise was of people fighting over the pans. Two women near Winston were kicking each other. Winston had felt angry. He wrote, "Until they become conscious, the prowls won't rebel. And until they have rebelled, they can't become conscious." Of course, the party said it had saved the prowls from the rich businessmen in the Great Revolution. The history textbooks of the party explained how, before the revolution, prowl children had been forced to work in factories from the age of 6. Women had been forced to work underground, digging for coal. In fact, everybody had awful lives. They were beaten and given no food. Women today still dug for coal underground, and the party taught that the prowls were like animals who must be controlled by a few simple rules. It was, Winston realised, a perfect example of doublethink, because the lives of the prowls today were as bad as they had been before the revolution. The party left them to be born, live, have children, and die early deaths. There were a lot of criminals among the prowls, but because they only fought and stole from each other, the party did not care. Most prowl homes did not have telescreens. There was a party slogan, "Prowls and animals are free." The party said that everybody was healthier, bigger, stronger, happier, more intelligent, and better educated than people 50 years ago. But history, for the people of Oceania, was always changing. So the stories of life before the Great Revolution could just as easily be false as true. Then Winston remembered how, just once, a few years ago, he had held in his hands a piece of paper which proved that the past had been changed. In the years after the revolution, most of its leaders had been executed on the orders of Big Brother, after they had confessed to their crimes in long public trials. In particular, 3 important party members had been executed after they confessed to working for Eurasia. About 5 years after this, Winston had found a page of an old copy of The Times, which was with some instructions he had received. It included the date when the newspaper was published and had a photograph of the 3 men attending a party meeting in New York. In the trial, they had confessed to being in Siberia on that day, selling secrets to the Eurasian army. So their confessions had been lies, which they had been forced to make, maybe by being tortured. Winston thought back to how he had felt when he had seen the photograph in the newspaper. It had felt so strange to hold the piece of paper in his hands. He had been afraid that the telescreen might show someone what he had found. Very quickly, he had put the page of newspaper with the photograph into a memory hole so that it would be burned. Now, he thought, why does the party make such a huge effort to rewrite history? What difference does it make? The reason for doing it was a mystery to him. Picking up his pen again, he wrote, "I understand how, I do not understand why." He wondered now, as he had done many times before, whether he was mad. If he was the only person in the world to believe that the past could not be changed, then he must be mad. But it was not the thought of being mad which frightened him. It was the thought of being wrong. In the end, he thought, The party will announce that 2 and 2 make 5, and you will have to believe it or be executed. And the most terrifying thing won't be that they kill you for disagreeing, but that the party is right. For how do we know that 2 plus 2 make 4, or that the past cannot be changed? Then the face of O'Brien came into his mind, and Winston felt sure that O'Brien was on his side. Winston knew in this moment that the party was wrong and that he was right. He had to hold on to the truth, even about little things. He was writing the diary for O'Brien, speaking to O'Brien. He wrote, "Freedom is the freedom to say that 2 plus 2 make 4. If that is allowed, then everything else follows."